The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day. Oral questions put by members. Just a reminder before we go into question period that no electronic devices are to be on. That applies to all members. No electronic devices. The time now is 3 o'clock and we will go to 4:30. And I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Residents and community leaders of Digby Neck and the Islands are understandably upset at how the former nurse practitioner of the Islands Community Health Clinic was let go. This part of the province has constantly been plagued with primary health care challenges. The residents of Digby Neck and the Islands quickly saw the value of a nurse practitioner. But it was not only the community who sang the praises of the nurse practitioner, so did the Premier when he was in opposition. In fact, just over a year ago, during question period, the current Premier asked the government of the day, how could you turn your back on a nurse practitioner who was ready and able to deliver primary health care? So my question for the Premiers, I would ask you to address the guests in the East Gallery today and tell them why your government is turning your back on their nurse practitioner.
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and my reply, of course, will be to the Leader of the Official Opposition. We do, in fact, support the ongoing presence of a nurse practitioner at that facility. We think it's important. We think it provides the level of care that is expected by the community there. I know that this is a very, very difficult situation, and I, of course, understand the anxiety that's being felt by the people in the community. The reality is that the decision with respect to this particular individual was made by the District Health Authority. They are the employer.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
The Premier is correct. There's a tremendous amount of anxiety in this community of Digby and the Islands. And it may have been a decision made by the DHA, but the DHA can report to your minister and to your government, and you have the ability to solve this issue. You've had the ability to solve this issue for the people of Digby Necks and the Islands since it started. Mr. Speaker, residents being served by the Islands Community Health Clinic finally had stability. They finally had a nurse practitioner who cared about them and worked for them. They had someone who stood up for them publicly when she felt their health care needs were not being addressed properly. Mr. Speaker, in 2001, twice in 2003, 2006, and 2008, this current government, while in opposition, tabled whistleblower legislation. Legislation which would protect workers who disclosed information but choosing to speak up against management. Community members feel very strongly that the nurse practitioner was asked to leave because she publicly spoke out against the District Health Authority. So my question to the Premiers, why won't your government practice what it preached while in opposition and tell the District Health Authority to settle this issue once and for all?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure what that preamble had to do with the question at all, but what I can say is that the District Health Authority had a meeting with members of the community. There were a number of options, I understand, that were advanced by the members of the community for the District Health Authority to consider. I understand that that process is still underway. I just want the member to know that I respect both the work of the District Health Authority and the members of the community who participate in the Community Health Board.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Bye, Mr. Premier. That community is without primary health care. You have the power to make a decision, and so does your Minister of Health, to solve this issue once and for all, instead of pushing the responsibility back to the District Health Authority. Mr. Speaker, the DHA said the decision to relieve the nurse practitioner from her duties was not clinical. This morning, the CEO of the Southwest District Health Authority apologized to the people of Digby Neck and the Islands for not being able to provide accessible primary health care. Mr. Speaker, action speaks louder than words. So my question for the Premier, will your government demand that the DHA reinstate the nurse practitioner so that the resident can once again have access to consistent health care services instead of allowing them to hide behind what is publicly perceived to be nothing more than a gag order?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I already indicated to the Leader of the Official Opposition, there was a meeting. I understand there have been communications between the District Health Authority and the members of the public, the Community Health Board there. They have set out the various options that they felt were appropriate. I did, in fact, hear what was being said by the CEO of the Health Board, the Health Authority, rather. I believe that the District Health Authority has to be accountable to the people of that community, and that's what they're doing. And I guess we'll see what the result of that is. But that is the law in this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Premier. Yesterday in this House, the Minister of Agriculture indicated that he was working on a plan and, quote, we have to make sure that the program design is one that will actually meet the needs of the beef industry. My question, if the government is working on a plan, if they are working on a plan, can the Premier tell this House today how much money has been targeted in this year's budget to support the plan of the Minister?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not at liberty to speak about the details of the plan that is still being worked through by the Minister of Agriculture along with the various stakeholders. They're trying to come up with a plan and an amount of money that will fit within the budget of the Department of Agriculture and will be effective for the industry. I think that's a perfectly reasonable approach to take and, of course, a more effective one than the previous government took. Here.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservatives on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find that answer very disappointing. I'm sure the beef industry farmers do as well, because it sends a very strong message that perhaps there was no intention to have any money in a budget to support the plan. So my question to the Premier is this. Without a clear-cut answer as to how much, will the Premier guarantee today that there will be money available to support the plan for the beef industry? Understanding it perhaps was inadvertently omitted, but will there be money there when it's needed by the farmers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want the member opposite to know that the consideration of the importance of agriculture in this province, including, of course, the beef industry, is something that we are very much concerned with. This is not a single issue. It's about a myriad of issues that exist within the Department of Agriculture. And, of course, within the budget of the Department of Agriculture is included money for the support of the policy and program initiatives that the department intends to enter into.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservatives on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked a specific question. I did not get a specific answer. So my question to the Premier is this. If assistance for Nova Scotia beef farmers was not a priority and was not in the 9-10 budget, will the Premier make it an immediate priority to redirect any funding from any other government department to ensure that those farmers will be supported?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I pointed out to the leader of the Conservative Party, The question of the importance of the beef industry in this province has always been an important one to this government. In fact, I can remember in the very early days after his appointment as the Minister of Agriculture, him raising this issue with me on a consistent basis, talking about the kind of work that was going to be necessary for him to do with the stakeholders in order to have a program that would realistically meet the needs of the beef industry. And I think he deserves to be congratulated for the work he's done in this regard, and we're hopeful that he'll be able to conclude that work and to put in place the program after the consultations are complete and program design is complete.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health, Mr. Speaker. For the second week in a row, this minister has failed to assume responsibility when it comes to the sudden release of a nurse practitioner on Digby Neck and the Islands. Mr. Speaker, it would appear that when you look at the legislation, the minister may have more authority than she thinks. Section 22(1) of the Health Authority Act states the minister shall make bylaws with respect to the appointment, removal, functions, and duties of officers, agents, and servants of the authority. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that information. I'm aware of the minister's meeting with the representatives this afternoon, so my question to the minister, will she review these bylaws with the community representatives this afternoon so we can once and for all establish the fact that this minister does indeed have the power and authority to do something about this situation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member is correct. I have a meeting set up with the community representatives who are here from the Digby Neck area. Mr. Speaker, I am very concerned regarding the situation in that area with respect to their clinic and health care being delivered in that community. But, Mr. Speaker, I think the way to reach a solution to this is through discussing the various proposals that have been exchanged between the District Health Authority and the citizens' groups, not by the minister sitting around and making bylaws, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, people in my community don't believe for a second this minister cannot solve this problem. They don't believe she cannot speak with the DHA and fix this situation. Taxpayers of Nova Scotia, including the taxpayers on the Neck and Islands, fund this DAA to the tune of over $70 million. People in this community believe that the nurse practitioner was terminated because she stood up for their health care needs, because she cared too much about her patients, all at the expense of hurting the feelings of her superiors in Yarmouth. So my question to the minister, given that this minister tabled whistleblowing legislation when she was in opposition, why is she not willing to speak to the CEO of Southwest Health and put into practice what she preached?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have been speaking with the CEO of the District Health Authority. Last week, I made the request that the District Health Authority sit down with representatives from the community. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, last Friday, that's exactly what occurred. Mr. Speaker, both parties, as I understand it, brought suggestions to the table. Responses to those suggestions have not concluded, Mr. Speaker. And until they do, Mr. Speaker, I will meet with both sides in this issue. I will hear what they have to say. And I look forward to their finding a resolution to this matter, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that meeting last Friday on the islands was useless. Mr. Speaker, residents of our community heard the CEO for the District Health Authority on the radio this morning. They heard his apology to the community members about the fact that they no longer have access to consistent primary health care services like they had in the past. Mr. Speaker, this is the very same person who caused this disruption in the first place. Mr. Speaker, my question, can the minister please confirm whether her bylaws created under Section 22(1) of the Health Authorities Act actually gives her power to deal with the senior management at the DHA level?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will say to the Honourable Member is that I am prepared to meet with people from his community to hear what it is they have to say today, Mr. Speaker. And following that, I will be in contact with the CEO of the District Health Authority, and I will continue to speak to the parties and attempt to find a resolution to this matter that is satisfactory to the community, as well as to the District Health Authority and to myself as Minister. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health again. Residents of my community are very concerned, but none more so than Dorothy Ohos. Dorothy was diagnosed with thyroid cancer in 2007 and received great hands-on care by the nurse practitioner who was suddenly terminated by the DHA. Dorothy's medical history was well known to this nurse practitioner, and much to Dorothy's surprise, when she reported back to her for a checkup earlier this month, the nurse practitioner was gone. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, tell Mr. Roger Ohos, who is in the gallery today, why Dorothy is no longer able to rely on the delivery of the consistent primary health care services through the island's community health center.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, presently there is a temporary nurse practitioner, 2 days, 1 week, 3 days, another week in the community. Now, Mr. Speaker, we have committed to the District Health Authority to go forward in posting that position as well in their attempt to recruit a new nurse practitioner, as the member would well know. Mr. Speaker, this is a personnel matter between an employee and an employer, Mr. Speaker. The employee has available to her a grievance procedure and a union to represent her through that process, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis, on your first supplementary.
By that answer, Mr. Speaker, I guess that means this meeting this afternoon is not going to mean too much.
Mr. Speaker,
Dorothy is not feeling well, and her symptoms are becoming worse. Dorothy reported to the island's clinic last Friday after waiting almost 2 hours. She left. She was not seen by the nurse practitioner. She returned later that afternoon and waited again for another couple of hours. Mr. Speaker, the clinic being open for 5 days over a 2-week period is taking its toll on Dorothy and is taking a toll on our community. My question, why is it acceptable to the minister that residents of Digby Neck and the islands be subject to reduced health care services when the situation can be easily rectified?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we understand that the community is concerned. Mr. Speaker, the District Health Authority has offered a variety of options, including expediting the grievance procedure for the employee in question, going directly to arbitration. They have also offered to have their decision reviewed by a third party, another District Health Authority, Mr. Speaker. There are other options that are currently being examined, options that have been suggested by the community, Mr. Speaker. And we will have the discussions and find a resolution through this process, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when this minister and this government was in opposition, they would have been mad when it came to reduced health care services in our rural remote communities like Long Island. They would have been demanding answers of government and crying foul when those answers never came.
Right.
Now it seems like we can't get her and her government to assume any responsibility for her department. My question to the minister, will the minister take control of the money allocated for the island's community health clinic in order to provide consistent accessibility and ensure that a nurse practitioner who cares about this community stays and helps these people?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think I've laid out fairly clearly what the issues are that we are dealing with, Mr. Speaker. We have a situation between an employer and an employee. We also have a situation where a community has had a reduction in their normal health care services. Mr. Speaker, I have brought the parties together. They have offered a variety of ideas in terms of moving forward on this issue. It is premature to take any action today until the ideas that have been put on the table have been thoroughly canvassed, Mr. Speaker, and that's what will happen before we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyll.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Health. As the Minister is aware, the Progressive Conservative government back in 2002 introduced one of the first nurse practitioner programs in the province of Nova Scotia in Brier and Long Islands and Digby Neck. Unfortunately, today the Minister has allowed the communities of Digby Neck to allow a committed, community-minded nurse practitioner, such as Karen Schneider, to be dismissed with no replacement. I'm very glad the Minister will be meeting with this group. They're in the gallery today. But, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is this. What are you prepared to do, as per your ministerial accountability, in order to ensure the residents of Digby Neck have timely access to health care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, as I've said, there is a nurse practitioner there 2 days one week and 3 days another week, Mr. Speaker. That's hardly nothing, as I hear the members of the opposition saying, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, additionally, we understand the need for a full-time nurse practitioner in that community, and we're very supportive of that. And in the absence of a resolution to this problem, the District Health Authority has gone forward in a timely manner to repost that position, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyll on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. During the recent provincial election, the NDP boasted that they had all the answers on health care. Their election platform states two things: ministerial accountability for emergency departments and to improve access to primary care with more nurse practitioners. What have the NDP done to able to accomplish to reduce the access to primary care with one less nurse practitioner? And there is no ministerial accountability as the minister continues to hand off these duties to the DHA. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister: will you remove this decision from the Southwest District Health Authority, and will you personally ensure the placement of a nurse practitioner in Digby Neck full time?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will tell the members of this House, unlike the former government that had no difficulty using the hammer on health care workers across the province whenever they felt like it, quite often for political gain, Mr. Speaker, this government will respect the employment relationship, Mr. Speaker. We will respect that there are collective agreements in place, Mr. Speaker. And we will ask the employer and the employee and their union to use the legal framework that is available to them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Argyll on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as we've seen, this minister seems more interested in hurling insults across the floor, playing the blame game rather than finding results. Yeah, here. The people who have driven many hours want to hear to have their case heard by the minister. They want results, and they deserve the access to a full-time nurse practitioner. The Health Liaison Committee has told me that they were not informed of any problems, nor were they consulted about the nurse practitioner situation. Ms. Snyder had bought land, built a house, and by all accounts doing a good job in treating the residents of Long and Briar Islands. There have been 6 nurse practitioners since 2002, and Ms. Snyder wanted to make her permanent home to be part of the community. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. Will you either place a nurse practitioner under someone else's responsibility in order to ensure health services is a priority over personal spite?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, what I would say is that, first of all, to the Honourable Member, there is a difference between stating facts and hurling insults. And, Mr. Speaker, I know that the member has a hard time with the difference, but nevertheless, Mr. Speaker, I have been clear.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've been clear about what the process is in this case. Mr. Speaker, we have an employment-employee relationship between the District Health Authority and an employee who has been let go. The employee has available to her a collective agreement and representation. The employer has offered an expedited grievance procedure, an arbitration, Mr. Speaker, and that is one of the options that is available, Mr. Speaker, and I'm encouraging the parties to pursue that option. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. During the election campaign, the Premier committed to Nova Scotians that he would balance the budget next year. So my question for the Premier is, will you repeat that commitment today?
The Honourable the Premier.
What I will do, Mr. Speaker, is indicate to the Leader of the Opposition that we are in the process of looking for the receipt of the report of the economic panel, and that we believe that balanced budgets are important for the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier was a fan of balanced budgets in opposition. He was a fan of balanced budget during the election campaign. Now it might be an operating principle. Now it seems balanced budgets were something for other parties that were expected of other parties, not the NDP. So my question for the Premier is, what steps are you taking to ensure that next year's budget will be balanced?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to answer the question of the Leader of the Opposition. We are taking a number of undertaking a number of activities to be able to put ourselves in a position to make sure that the province's finances are sustainable. We did that beginning by having a review done by Deloitte to indicate exactly the position that the province is in. We've commissioned an economic advisory panel that's going to report on the various options that are available to the province in order to be able to both meet its obligations and to be able to provide some physical stability to the province. In addition to that, internally, the Minister of Finance, of course, is conducting his own consultations and reviews and departmental initiatives to try and determine what can be done on the department side as we get ready to receive this additional information.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government has removed the requirement for balanced budgets for the foreseeable future. That says a lot more than vague promises during an election campaign. Actions speak louder than words in this case. So my question for the Premier is, when is the first year that Nova Scotians can expect a balanced budget from your government?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just pointed out to the member opposite exactly what we were undertaking in order to bring the province's books back into balance and to make sure that we're on a sustainable province, a sustainable path for the province. But I noticed throughout the election campaign, of course, the leader of the opposition said he had no idea when they would be able to balance the books of the province. He recommended, in fact, and has recommended throughout.
Order, please. The Premier has the floor, and be careful of your language.
In the fact, Premier. The Leader of the Opposition said it would be on...
Come on.
Order, that language is not acceptable in this House. I'm going to ask you one more time. That language is not acceptable in this House. Okay, the Honourable the Premier has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member opposite, in fact, said that it would be unwise to balance the budget. So my question for him is, do we take his advice now, or should I ignore him?
Thank you. Okay. The honourable member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Community Services. The Government of Canada, in its 2000 budget, announced $1.5 billion in federal stimulus funding for housing. The province's share was $96.12 million. These funds were to be delivered through an amendment my honourable colleague from Argyle signed when he was minister to the Affordable Housing Program Agreement. It was to be expended within 2 years on a 50-50 cost share with the provinces. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. Can the Minister update the House on whether any monies have been spent, and if they have, where have they been spent?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the Honourable Member for his question, and I would like to inform him that, yes, we have gone forward with the housing stimulus 50-50 package, and we are presently tenders are being sent out each and every day, so the process is taking place, and the different areas are all throughout the province of Nova Scotia that we are actually putting the money for renovations and also new units and especially for seniors and persons with disabilities. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the added result of these dollars was to create work in areas hit by the recession. The beauty of the retrofits and senior apartment construction was that smaller local companies could bid on the work. We're hearing that these companies are unable to win these tenders. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. Could the Minister of Community Services provide the House with a sense of the work and the type of company that might be able to bid?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Well, Mr. Speaker, to the Honourable Member, actually, to date we have created or preserved 1,200 units, and the total investment is $128 million, and of that, $32 million was carried from the former agreement over to the present time, which makes it add on to the $96 million for the $128 million. And the tendering process is available for businesses to apply. And so the projects are going forth all throughout Nova Scotia. So I'm not quite sure what the Honourable Member is referring to. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes and your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would ask if the Minister could table that list for the House. Mr. Speaker, the ability for local contractors to do work in their own community creates a lot of spin-off effects that would only bolster our economy and provide much-needed work in our provincial housing stock. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. As you are the Minister responsible for procurement in the province, will you make the necessary changes to see that local contractors are given a competitive advantage to compete for these necessary community services housing work?
Who was your question directed to? The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, and through you, Mr. Speaker, to the member opposite, I certainly will take that under advisement and have discussions with the Minister of Community Services.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question today is for the Minister of Health. Yesterday, Nova Scotians, and indeed all Canadians, were again saddened to learn that a 13-year-old boy from Toronto has become the latest victim of the H1N1 virus, the second young victim in our country in the last 2 days. At one of Nova Scotia's first immunization clinics, parents stood in line, some for as many as 4 hours, to get themselves and their children immunized. These recent deaths start to hit home for these and all other parents who are anxiously awaiting for clinics to start in their area. Statistics south of the border, and those here as well, are showing that young people are particularly vulnerable. My question to the minister is, why did she not consider providing mass immunization clinics in schools so that children and teachers could be immunized both efficiently and expeditiously?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, the Chief Medical Officer of this province and indeed of provinces right across the country, as well as our federal public health officer, Dr. Butler Jones, spoke regularly throughout the planning for this pandemic with respect to the best way to get vaccines out. It was determined that community clinics were probably one of the best ways to handle such a mass immunization program, Mr. Speaker. And with that, we are seeing each of the DHAs roll out the vaccine program in the DHA. In some cases, schools indeed will be used as sites, but they won't be a site solely for teachers and students. They, in fact, will be a community clinic site for the public as well, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, from September until June, schools become a focal point for parents and children in every community. Everyday parents deal with consent forms, and they are accustomed to that. I expected the minister to tell me that they needed to do that, which might have slowed things down, but consent forms are a common thing in schools, and I think it would have been one less piece of paperwork that the actual DHA would have to have contended with. New Brunswick, in fact, and following up on the minister's comment that all of the other jurisdictions had been in contact with each other, but New Brunswick is rolling out a school-based program because they see the value in delivering immunizations in settings where one of our most vulnerable populations gather daily. Yesterday, here in Nova Scotia, parents were actually taking their children out of school so they could line up for the public health clinics. So my question to the minister is, does the minister agree or disagree with the concept of delivering a school-based H1N1 immunization program in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, As we speak, community clinics are occurring across the province. Mr. Speaker, part of the establishment of clinics throughout the province, part of that process was having the district health authorities who best know the regular patterns for immunization, other flu programs that they've offered in the past, community use, for example, Mr. Speaker, were all things that were taken into consideration, as well as personnel, Mr. Speaker. What numbers of personnel were available to deliver programs throughout the program, the province. So, Mr. Speaker, we have a very good program of community health clinics, immunization clinics across the province, occurring now in each of the DHAs, starting with healthcare workers in most cases, Mr. Speaker. And we're asking that people allow high-risk groups, such as people with children under 5 years of age and compromised immune systems, first, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much. And, Mr. Speaker, I think we've heard a bit of a mixed message there, because the community health clinics are for everyone. Everyone lines up with the same long wait in some cases. And people, whether they're high risk or have other immune deficiencies, they're all lined up together. And we are, in fact, fighting for time here, Mr. Speaker. The evidence is that young people are more vulnerable to this virus, and the schools make a lot of sense in terms of a location for that. Some children are going to require two doses, 3 weeks apart, and we have heard in the media that it takes 14 days for the vaccine to become effective. So time is very important, and we also know that we want to get the young people particularly vaccinated. So my question again to the minister is, will she reconsider offering a province-wide school-based immunization program, which would eliminate some of the stress on parents and reduce some of the potential lineups at public immunization clinics?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to draw the Honourable Member's attention to the fact that yesterday one of the clinics that was offered in the Colchester area was in fact at the Douglas Street Elementary School in Truro, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the various clinics around the province are occurring in the community, in the places where the district health authorities have identified can handle large numbers of people, Mr. Speaker, in a short period of time. Thank you.
Just a reminder to members, some of our questions are a little long, some of our answers are a little long. If you can be concise, it would be appreciated. The Honourable Member for... The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Last week, when asked about his cadre of 8 junior members of Cabinet and their associated responsibilities, assignments and accountability, the Premier faintly said they'll basically do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. What he wasn't specific about is the extent and nature of the work of these 8 junior ministers that they would have. Mr. Speaker, can the Premier inform this House, if he's had time to reflect on his knee-jerk actions to grow the size of Cabinet from 12 to 20, and if so, has he at least thought about public disclosure, reporting and accountability measures for his junior ministers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I certainly appreciate the question from the member for Cape Breton North. I always enjoy a question when I've had a hand in writing it, Mr. Speaker, because the reality is that I saw the member from Cape Breton North outside of this place, and I was pleased to tell him that with respect to any travel costs or anything associated with the ministerial assistance, that we would be pleased to include those in the reporting of the various ministers at the end of each month, so that he can be sure to be able to track the activities of the ministerial assistance.
The Honourable Member of Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Premier's ability to policy on the fly is not isolated to flip-flops on election promises or fiscal positions. It now extends to his front bench and his gaggle of NDP cabinet wannabes. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier commit to providing a written code of conduct, written policy directives, and financial accountability for his baby ministers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you. As I pointed out In the past to the member opposite, he understands that because we have undertaken to shrink the size of cabinets, something that was unknown to the to the members opposite when they were in government, that the work that's taking place by the ministerial assistants is in concert with the individual ministers, that they are assisting them in concert with the decisions and programming that they undertake in their department. And this is very good for the work of the individual departments, but it's also very good in ensuring that the government has contact with the members of the public.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Since the Premier seems to be overseeing a covert operation rather than an open and transparent government, maybe, just maybe, he'll acquire the capacity to deal with the serious matter of confidence, cabinet confidentiality, code of conduct, and public reporting and accountability. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier finally admit that his knee-jerk reaction to appease his backbench members with the sharpest knives is not good public policy, nor is it appropriate executive decision-making, given the lack of structure, transparency, reporting, and accountability from this government?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The openness and transparency of this government far exceeds really anything that was seen in the time that I have been in the House of Assembly.
Order,
Mr. Speaker, and part of that openness, a part of that transparency is making sure that the program of government, that the information of government gets out to the people of Nova Scotia, and of course the ministerial assistants perform that function. They make sure that the people of the province have an appropriate level of contact with the government.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. A situation was brought to my attention yesterday. Mr. Speaker, a family in my riding has four children below the age of three, with triplets and another child, and a mother who is an elementary school teacher. They knew it was important to get vaccinated. Now, they tried to book a vaccination with their family doctor, but they were told that even though children are supposed to be a priority, they couldn't get in for 2 weeks. So they packed up their children and drove to the clinic in Enfield. They arrived at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they stood in line outside in the cold with their four small children. The only people being ushered in for priority vaccinations were pregnant women. Mr. Speaker, the father I spoke to didn't have a problem with pregnant women going first. He did have a problem, however, with children not being targeted here in Nova Scotia. My question is to the minister, why are children not a priority for this government?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member has it wrong. Children, in fact, are a priority for this government. Children, in fact, are a priority for the DHA, where that clinic was held yesterday. Mr. Speaker, people moved aside in the line to allow children and people with compromised immune systems or pre-existing conditions to get vaccinated first. And I want to take an opportunity to thank those people. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table the a copy of a press release from that DHA saying, in keeping with provincial recommendations, clinics will give priority to pregnant women and children under five.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the White family is trying to do the right thing. The department's own media release points out that H1N1 activity has been highest in the Guysborough-Antigonish Strait Health Authority and Capital Health. And the Health Department website has a link to the federal government site with this information. As with the seasonal flu, children less than 5 years old, and especially those less than two, are more likely to catch the H1N1 flu virus. And if they do catch it, they are more likely to develop severe complications like pneumonia or breathing problems. This can put their health at serious risk. That's why it's important for parents and caregivers of children to reduce the risk of H1N1 exposure, and I'd like to table that. So the whites tried to get vaccinated, but the lack of government planning made this impossible. After they stood in the cold for 3 hours, they gave up and headed home without getting vaccinated. Children and other individuals at high risk for H1N1 are being deterred from getting the vaccine. Why are there no clinics in Metro this week? Where is the plan for children and those in high-risk groups?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't know if the Honourable Member heard the Chief Medical Officer from the Capital District this morning on the radio. She was excellent. She talked about the clinics that are coming next, the community clinics that are coming next week. She talked about the decision that the CDHA made to do healthcare workers this week and start with the public next week in these clinics, when they will have an ample supply of vaccines so that they won't run out. They have 6 locations. They'll have 1,000 doses of vaccine in each of the locations, Mr. Speaker, and they will be very prepared and very able to meet the demands out there. And I'm glad there is a demand, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, surely we can do more than one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, what is the white family supposed to do? Stand in line for hours on end at another clinic, hoping they'll eventually get inside out of the cold before it's lunchtime or nap time or supper time? Hope one of their 4 small children doesn't get sick and infect the others? Hope mom doesn't bring the flu home from school because the province didn't run a school-based immunization program? My question for the Minister of Health is, what is the white family supposed to do this week?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, we have been talking about good public health. What that means, Mr. Speaker, we all need to be practicing good public health practice. We need to be washing our hands, Mr. Speaker, frequently. We need to be coughing into our sleeve, Mr. Speaker. We need to be staying home if we are symptomatic, Mr. Speaker. That is the best protection we have in terms of spreading and trying not to contact the disease, Mr. Speaker. And we need to get the vaccine when it becomes available. Mr. Speaker, the vaccination program is a 5-week process, Mr. Speaker. Not everybody is going to be able to get it on the first day of the program, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, this month the Lion laid off 38 people at their call centre in Sydney. It is yet another blow to an area with a higher than the average unemployment rate, an area which is already reeling from the worst economic downturn in a generation. And this simply serves as another reminder of the importance of long-term, sustainable economic development programs, and not simply talk about tea and networking. Can this minister tell us what actions he has taken on this issue since it was brought to his attention in this House last week?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you to the member opposite, what happens when contact centres or when anything closes, for that matter, that we've had NSBI has a hand in, one of the first things that they do is they put together a transition team. A transition team is in place, and what the transition team does try to do and endeavours to do is to work with those employees and with the employer when jobs are lost. Mr. Mr. Speaker, on the topic of contact centers, I mean, contact centers have been around in the province of Nova Scotia for some time. And, you know, they create up to 19,000 jobs. And recently, Mr. Speaker, we even made some rebate investments in additional centers to go in other parts of rural Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and for the members of the government backbench, I'd like to translate that. It means nothing was done. That's what it means. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, these workers, they need help now.
Yeah, it does.
Economic opportunities in the area are strained at best. The 103 workers that are laid off across the province of Nova Scotia found themselves in need of concrete actions, not hollow promises. Can this minister specifically outline what additional programs will be made available to help these workers in their time of need, which will allow them to stay in their own communities?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, we just finished a very, very difficult year. There is a recession. There is a recession. Have people lost their jobs as a result of the recession? Yes, they have. You know, that's unfortunately. The recession is being experienced around the world. We have fallen victim like everybody else. One of the good things, though, Mr. Speaker, is that as in August of this year, more people are employed in Nova Scotia than any other year since the 1980s. So we have worked hard, Mr. Speaker, to maintain jobs and to create new jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. The reality of the world is there is a recession going on.
The Honourable Member of Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I guess what the reality is here is that nothing has been done for these 103 people. Now, Mr. Speaker, this government has really done nothing to help these people. But Sydney wasn't the only place that was affected by this. Amherst was affected. Truro was affected. And what was the NDP's response? Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Members for Truro Bible Hill, Cape Breton Nova, and Cumberland North all issued press releases.
Identical
press releases. And in those press releases, they all said the same thing, and I'll table them. They're right here, Mr. Speaker. I understand that the employees and their families will be upset by this. Even one job loss is too many. Now, Mr. Speaker, this is shameful. At this time, when these workers need their help, the NDP backbenchers cannot even form their own individual thoughts. They had to leave it up to the spin doctors of the party. My final supplementary is to the Premier, Mr. Speaker. How can these workers have confidence in his government when his own MLAs do not even care enough or aren't allowed to form their own opinions on this subject?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to congratulate the members that were just identified by the member opposite for being engaged and concerned about their individual constituencies. And they know, Mr. Speaker, that not only the Minister of Economic and Rural Development, but in fact the entire Executive Council is engaged in making sure that there are good jobs in rural Nova Scotia. That's the work we're engaged in every single day.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Today, students at Dalhousie University learned of the status of that institution's ability to offer on-site H1N1 clinics for their students. In a memo released today by the Vice President of Student Services, students were told that there are current challenges with regard to the availability of vaccine and that they were still awaiting word from Capital Health on when the vaccine will be available to the university. Given that this minister is responsible for the largest immunization rollout in the province, will the minister please enlighten all members of the House about the challenges being experienced with regard to the availability of H1N1 vaccine as referred to in this memo? And I will table the memo. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to assure everyone that anybody who wants to be vaccinated against the H1N1 virus will have the opportunity to be vaccinated. The program is a program that will occur over the next 5 weeks, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, we have placed an order for 1.4 million doses of vaccine, Mr. Speaker, which will be more than enough to cover the demands. All of the vaccine does not arrive at once, Mr. Speaker. We received 52,000 doses last week. We received an additional 52,000 doses this week. And so on, Mr. Speaker. It will continue. We will continue on that kind of a basis to receive vaccine. It gets distributed then across the province on a proportional basis to each DHA.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the assurances of the Minister, but there are a lot of people waiting for that vaccine, and I'm not sure that we have the exact information we need. There are 16,000 students at Dalhousie University, and they were being told in this memo to go to public clinics when they open next week in HRM. Mr. Speaker, we all know that it's going to be a tough sell already to get university students to get vaccinated. And now it's an even tougher sell if we ask them to go to Spryfield or downtown or some other location during class hours and to wait in line there. My question to the Minister is, if there is a vaccine supply challenge, how does moving the entire student population of Dalhousie to another location within Capital District actually fix this problem?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Honourable Member and all of the members of this House that students in particular are a group that we want to get the vaccine. We will be making sure that we monitor very closely on a weekly basis the uptake of the vaccine. And if we are having difficulty reaching that population, we will modify our approach to ensure that they get the vaccine. Mr. Speaker, the clinics in the Capital District open next week for the public, and students from Dalhousie or St. Mary's or anywhere else are welcome to attend those clinics, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that young people are a high-risk group. The Minister's told us that the emphasis will be for high-risk, that young people are included in the high-risk group along with pregnant women and are being seen that way, and yet we're not making the vaccine convenient to be provided at the place where there are 16,000 students in one place. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, why is it not possible to have some of the vaccine being used in the other Capital Health sites delivered to Dalhousie instead of making students travel to other public clinics?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as somebody who's a faculty member for many years at Dalhousie, I'd like to assure the Honourable Member that Dalhousie students live all over the metro area, and they will have great access to the public community clinics throughout the metro area. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health Promotion and Protection. Yesterday, I tried to ask a very straightforward question. I want to work with this minister in a constructive manner. It's been brought to my attention that many general practitioners have serious concerns with what is being given to them by Health Promotion and Protection. I know that I'd like to address an issue before a problem arises. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, are you willing to look at a more efficient manner of administering these vaccines based on concerns raised by family doctors?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank Doctors Nova Scotia for their involvement in the rolling out of this vaccine. They have been very helpful in terms of providing us with people who will assist in this process and advice on how to do the process. Mr. Speaker, there has been concern expressed with respect to the paperwork. However, this is because this is a new vaccine for a new virus. The requirements are requirements that come not only from our chief medical officer, but in fact through the Public Health Agency of Canada.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm certainly in full support of Docs Nova Scotia and the work that they do, and also by the efforts of the Department of Health Promotion and Protection to assure that many Nova Scotians will be vaccinated this fall. I do have some concerns where the process can be improved, and I believe it's incumbent upon the Minister to listen and act appropriately. Two of the most pressing concerns that the Minister should be interested in, that I'm hearing from practitioners, is the issue of the time required to administer the vaccine and the issue about the onerous paperwork that's being asked by the doctor's offices. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is this. Is the Minister willing to review the practices regarding solutions to reduce paperwork burden upon doctors in order to address the shortcomings regarding the H1N1 plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I understand it, physicians are required to fill out paperwork that will tell us who exactly is receiving the vaccine, some characteristics of those people, whether it's a pregnant woman, whether or not it's a child under the age of four, whether or not it's a young person, a young adult. Mr. Speaker, this helps us keep track of the uptake of particularly high-risk groups, and it allows us to modify our approach if we're not getting through to those groups, Mr. Speaker, which is an extremely important thing in this particular pandemic. Additionally, the paperwork allows us to keep track if there are any adverse reactions to vaccine, Mr. Speaker. And this is a new vaccine, and the Public Health Agency of Canada, as I understand it, require that batches and those kinds of pieces of information need to be kept track of as well, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There are always ways that things can be improved. I know that the Minister is seeking the best results when it comes to the prevention of H1N1 in Nova Scotia. As we saw yesterday, there's willingness for Nova Scotians to be vaccinated, as we saw in Elmsdale. Due to the time that is required by department officials to administer a vaccine, a lot of people were turned away after waiting in line to receive their vaccine. Many family doctors who have many years of experience in the health field feel that a shot can be administered in 1 to 2 minutes, and that the 4 minutes is much too much time given the nature of the pandemic. Right now, the requirement is for 4 minutes per vaccine. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, is the Minister willing to review the practices regarding the amount of time to administer the vaccines in order to ensure a rapid response with the mass immunization clinics?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think, Mr. Speaker, no one could have predicted the number of people who turned up at Elmsdale yesterday for the vaccines. The fact that people traveled from fairly significant distances to get to that clinic. Mr. Speaker, this is the largest immunization campaign that we have ever seen in this province, and I'm sure that there will be a lot of reflection once this process is completed with respect to the effectiveness and the efficiency. Mr. Speaker, we do surveillance throughout all of the 5 weeks and modify the campaign given the effect, given what we're seeing in the data that's being collected. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, last week the Dartmouth General Hospital peaked at 240% capacity. On Monday, the hospital sat at 170% capacity with every single floor in the hospital holding patients waiting for beds and some patients waiting in excess of 24 hours. Yesterday, got no better. Two surgeries were cancelled. And one was put on hold due to lack of beds. Last week, the minister said that the hospital was trying to avoid cancelling surgeries to solve problems. Obviously, that's no longer an option. The regularity of overcrowding and code census calls has increased dramatically in the past month. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister admit that the overcrowding situation at the Dartmouth General has worsened since she became minister?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, I am very concerned about the code census at the Dartmouth General Hospital. Mr. Speaker, surgery has been increased in the hospital, and as I understand it, the surgeries have resulted in a loss of beds for people to be able to move from the emergency department onto the other floors, Mr. Speaker. I understand that two beds have been opened up, but obviously this is not enough to accommodate the current situation, Mr. Speaker. And I will be seeking a meeting with the CEO of the Capital District Health Authority to see what else we might be able to do at the Dartmouth General to ease the situation, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'm glad to hear that after 2 weeks of asking this question almost daily in the House that there's finally going to be a meeting with the CEO and finally some things are happening. But two beds isn't going to make a lot of difference. Tuesday morning started with six patients waiting to be admitted in an ambulance that couldn't offload because there was no bed in the hospital to move them into the emergency room. The minister has repeatedly stated that the solutions will take time and has stated on the news that patients and staff will have to toughen it out. Well, Mr. Speaker, what I'm unclear about is what level of overcapacity is the minister willing to accept is before she recognizes just how serious it is and the fact that there will need to be additional funding to solve this problem. Is it 140%, 170%, 300%? So will the minister please tell me exactly what level of overcapacity she feels is acceptable at the hospital while they wait for the long-term solutions?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm wondering whether or not the Honourable Member from Dartmouth might make a recommendation for where the Liberal Trust funds could go, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I felt I was being quite polite with the minister and trying to very much solve this problem, and unfortunately the minister has reverted to throwing insults and blaming others, if she doesn't want to do the job, maybe the Premier should just replace her.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, this is truly a serious situation. This is a serious situation just like the situation in Digby is a serious situation. The fact of the matter is this hospital is facing significant challenges and it undoubtedly will get worse as flu spreads. It undoubtedly is going to get worse. So, Mr. Speaker, is the minister prepared to make additional funds available to the Dartmouth General Hospital when she meets with the CEO of the Capital District Health Authority?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Mr. Speaker, as I said in my initial answer to the Honourable Member, I am very concerned about what's occurring at the Dartmouth General Hospital. Mr. Speaker, as we all acknowledged in a debate here last week, the problems at Dartmouth General have been going on for more than 10 years, Mr. Speaker. However, the code census situation in the last 2 weeks causes me great concern, Mr. Speaker, and I know that the additional two beds has not really made a significant difference. I know that there's been an increase of surgery there, and I would like to speak with the CEO of the DHA to find out from them what recommendations they are making to end this situation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection. Yesterday in this House, Mr. Speaker of Assembly, the Minister spoke of how the H1N1 vaccine would be made available based on population density. My question today to the Minister, quite simply, Mr. Speaker, are the people living in rural Nova Scotia in less densely populated areas less important when it comes to protecting them from serious health risks?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if that was the interpretation that the Honourable Member took from my answer yesterday, I would like an opportunity to correct it. Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier in question period, the vaccine is arriving on a regular basis. We started with 52,000 doses arriving last week, and that was distributed to the DHA proportionally based on population. But smaller DHAs with less population did get vaccine. And then it's up to the DHAs to look at their communities and make decisions around the distribution of that vaccine, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it's encouraging to hear that the Minister sees that all Nova Scotians are important when it comes to who is at risk, and it wasn't my perception, it was the phone calls and the emails that I'm getting. That's the perception of the people where I come from, Mr. Speaker. That's the reality. Mr. Speaker, family physicians, they're attempting to assist their patients by providing clinics in their offices, yet because they themselves are unable to procure the vaccine, even though they've made out the necessary application, no date has been verified nor how much vaccine will be made available to them, making it impossible for physicians to tell their patients if they will have access to a vaccine. My question is simply this. When will the family physicians expect to receive the necessary vaccines to treat those who need it now?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I asked officials in my department that very question this morning, and Mr. Speaker, family physicians who are participating in this program are, in fact, receiving vaccine today throughout the province. Not all family physicians will be administering vaccines, Mr. Speaker. There were some conditions. They have to be able to store the vaccine adequately, Mr. Speaker, and sign a contract with the an agreement with Public Health in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would only say this from talking to my own family physician. It's hard for her to set anything up which includes storage space for the vaccine when they don't know when it's coming or how much is coming. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Minister, my constituency of Hants West has a population of slightly less than 20,000 people. As it stands now, only two H1N1 vaccine clinics are scheduled, both at the Windsor Elementary School on Monday, November 9th and Monday, November 16th, between 3 and 8:30. Why only two clinics in Windsor? None for the Hants Shore Health Clinic or in Hantsport, for example. Will local doctors be asked, Mr. Speaker, to be on duty these two Monday evenings? And can slightly less than 20,000 people be vaccinated in a total of less than 11 hours?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, the vaccination program is one that will occur over at least a five-week period, Mr. Speaker. We have ordered sufficient vaccine for everyone in Nova Scotia who wishes to be vaccinated. We will monitor very carefully the uptake of the vaccination, and we will modify the administration of the vaccination based on the data that we're collecting on a regular, daily, and weekly basis.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the government made a $6 million loan announcement for 12 child care centre renovations. The government press release that went out yesterday also said subsidies, and I quote, subsidies may be available for qualified families so that they can take advantage of child care spaces. But looking at the announcement, Mr. Speaker, it appears that the funding provided was through loans for renovations only. And, Mr. Speaker, an interesting observation here is that 9 of the 12 approvals announced yesterday went to NDP ridings, totaling $5.5 million out of $6.3 million. That's quite significant, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, was any money approved for additional child care subsidies as part of this announcement? If so, how much? If not, why not?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Firstly, this process has been ongoing for a while, so there has not been any political involvement in the decision-making. It's a very stringent program. There's criteria, and any one of the honourable members or any members in this House can certainly come to me. I've already offered that to one particular member of the House, is that my staff will sit down and go through what that particular process is, and it is a scoring process, and so that is certainly available. And with regards to the question on the subsidies, that's a different program altogether. This was announcing the expansion loans that were made available to daycare centres throughout the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South and your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what the Minister is telling this House and all Nova Scotians, I guess that 9 out of 12 announcements in NDP ridings was just a coincidence. It was nothing to do with politics. Mr. Speaker, if anybody believes that, you know. Mr. Speaker, this announcement will do little to help people access childcare, especially in Cape Breton. Of the $6.3 million announced yesterday, $173,000 is going to help renovate and expand just 2 child care centres on Cape Breton Island. Again, I'll remind Mr. Speaker, you and members of the House, that out of the $6.3 million, $5.5 million went to NDP ridings. And I hear the member from Cape Breton Nova, he got $13,000, and I guess that's the token payment in Cape Breton for his riding, $13,000. Cape Breton is not receiving its fair share of renovation funding from yesterday's announcement. Not only that, Mr. Speaker, Cape Bretoners can't be guaranteed more subsidized child care spaces since this minister hasn't addressed this issue. My question again for the minister, why are you treating Cape Breton unfairly when it comes to child care funding?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. As I mentioned, if I wanted any brownie points in the process, I think the Premier would have gotten a daycare centre in his constituency, which he hasn't, because it was an absolute fair process. And as I said, I have invited anyone here that wants to know that process and sit down with staff, because there are stringent criteria that we need to follow. We need to know that the daycare centre applying for the expansion fund has the ability to sustain the new daycare centre or the centre that they are expanding. We have to know that they have the board of directors and volunteers that's able to sustain it over the years. So there's many, many variety of criteria that have to be met, and it's done on a fair basis. And we have nothing to hide. So ask the question, meet with the staff. We have nothing to hide.
Thank you, Minister. The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Community Service mentioned that the Premier didn't get one in his riding. Well, the Deputy Premier didn't get one in his riding either, but of course he's from Cape Breton. You know, so I mean, but anybody that would suggest that 9 out of 12 in NDP ridings is a coincidence, well, I'll leave that to your judgment and to the judgment of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Several months ago, Danny Ellis made an application to community services for his daycare, Explore and Discover, in Cape Breton. He was asking for $48,000 to expand his daycare for 16 additional children, and was refused. The Department of Community Services said that no more funding was available. Based on yesterday's $6 million announcement, This can't be the real reason, Mr. Speaker. My question to the minister, can you explain why Mr. Ellis was denied funding to expand his daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, thank you for the question. I cannot speak on the individual cases. However, as I said, there are criteria we go through. This is the third round of funding. So there have been daycare over the first and second round of expansion funding in Cape Breton that has received that funding. This is the third and the last part of the funding process. And as I said, each and every application, there's many things that we have to review. So if the Honourable Member wants to sit with staff, we can go over that particular application and identify to him where some of the issues might have been presented. The other aspect is we have other funding within Community Services for Daycare Centre that can be accessed. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today my question will be for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, I would hope that the Premier would realize today a lot of questions being asked today to go to the very heart of the credibility of this government. I would hope the Premier would be concerned about that. Mr. Speaker, during the last election, the Premier on many occasions said that he would honour commitments made by the previous government. I would ask him today if he would tell this House what criteria he was using to determine whether he will honour that commitment he made during the campaign.
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, obviously we take the commitments we make over the course of an election campaign very, very seriously. There were, when we arrived in our offices, we found, for example, that there were commitments that were made by various members of the government over the course of the campaign that hadn't gone through any process whatsoever, hadn't gone through the Executive Council. These were, of course, commitments that we were largely unaware of that were being made by the former government. So, of course, every one of those have to be assessed on the basis of merit in order to determine, A, you know, whether or not they amounted to an actual commitment made by the government rather than by an individual member, and B, whether or not they were sustainable in the context of the budget, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, Mr. Speaker, through you, I'm going to table another document. I know the Premier has seen this many times. Headline says, Dexter says he keep Tory promises. Now, I never said some, maybe. He said he would keep the promises. Mr. Speaker, I'm going to quote what he said. We need to know just exactly what this government has committed to in these communities. If they've made a commitment to a community, we will honour it. Mr. Speaker, I want to know from the Premier today, will he keep that commitment he made, or was that just an election promise to become Premier of this province?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Where there were commitments made on behalf of the government of the province, we, we're doing our best to honour all of those commitments. There were occasions where the commitments that were made without the allocations budgets by the former government. You have to really ask the question, if you make a commitment and you don't allow for it in the budget, how serious the commitment actually was. But because we take it seriously, in each one of those cases, we have gone back to the budgeting process to see if they are sustainable. And above and beyond that, Mr. Speaker, I think there is an obligation to make sure that what we do in relation to each one of these is actually the right thing for the province and the right thing for the community. And of course we are assessing those as well.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on your final supplementary.
Cumberland South. That's
I'm sorry. Street. Cumberland South. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. I know the people in my own area have heard what the Premier said during the campaign, and they're expecting him to keep his word. Mr. Speaker, the Premier stated the position of his government was to be open, transparent, and accountable. What we've witnessed since June is secrecy and uncertainty when it comes to these commitments. Mr. Speaker, my question again through you is to the Premier. Will the Premier table the commitments that the previous government made and the ones that he is going to follow through on so that Nova Scotians will understand where this NDP government stands, but more importantly, that they can count on the Premier of this province keeping his word? Here.
the Honourable the Premier.
I think it would really be more appropriate if they would actually table the commitments they made, because, quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, there are still some that we're not even aware of. Mr. Speaker,
The Premier has the floor.
All of the commitments that were made over the course of the campaign, we are working on, Mr. Speaker. I can tell the member for Cumberland South should understand, because he was a minister, that everything that we do with respect to the various aspects of program delivery or capital delivery has to be accounted for within the budget. So over the next number of budgets, where we are able to accommodate those particular projects that make sense, of course we're going to do that, Mr. Speaker. And we're going to do our best to make sure that they are the best decisions for the individual communities.
Okay. Thank you. The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. This morning there was a breakfast by the Canadian Cancer Society. I believe the Minister was at that breakfast. And they pointed out there that once again that the program for boarding transportation and the boarding transportation and ostomy program has not been increased for the last 15 years. The last increase was under a Liberal government then. So my question to the Minister is, will an increase in the income threshold be actively considered in next year's budget deliberations? Yes. Yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, yes.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Well, I think that's very good, Mr. Speaker. I condensed my question. We had a good condensed answer because I know the time is of the essence. I know that in the past the NDP have answered to the Cancer Society that, in fact, they did support that and that they had called on the Conservative government to do the same. So I'm glad to hear that the Minister has committed today.
Order, please. The time for oral question period has expired. So.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.